Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Is Daniil Medvedev the best tennis player in the world? Male. Catherine Whittaker. That is the question that was hanging in the air on our WhatsApp chat late last night. Matt Roberts is here. It all kicked off. Generally speaking, he has caused some consternation in tennis podcast towers over the last 12 hours. So we've got Daniil Medvedev to talk about because he is the new champion in Shanghai. We've got Alexander Zverev, his defeated final opponent, to talk about Stefanos Tsitsipas, Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, Andy Murray, Coco Gauff. We've got our Davis Cup finals in Madrid competition winner to give a call to once we've found out who's won it. Oh my word, there's so much to talk about. So answer my question, Catherine.
Well, you were one long pause and one word away from me having to do an Andy Murray impersonation. Or I say having to, me delighting in doing an Andy Murray impersonation. But
well,
alas.
Do it anyway.
Female player. That wasn't my best. Wasn't my best.
I thought it was going to be, I'm getting closer.
No. I didn't.
Daniil Medvedev, getting closer.
Chip in here, Matt, but I wasn't aware that was specifically what we were arguing about last night.
Well, I thought it was one of those situations where the tennis podcast was about to end. Given the amount of back and forth that was going on. But I'm gradually getting used to that just being the norm.
Well, I thought the world was about to end, Matt, because David was being so downbeat and pessimistic, and it made me feel like the world was falling off its axis.
For the second time in seven days.
I think you might have broken him last week.
Yeah, I mean, if we just go back in time a little bit.
I like where this conversation's going.
We should probably do this in chronological order. Yes, we will be talking Daniil Medvedev and all the massive tennis stories of the world in the next few moments. But yeah, let's just go back 6 days, shall we? Because when we last came to you from the Beefeater pub in Solihull all together, we were on the brink of the showdown between the Solihull showdown. Between
it was a
Matt
happier
and myself.
Time.
Yeah, and it was going to be staged at the Henley and Arden Club on hard courts, sadly. And it all happened, folks, and we got to two games all. I had love 30 on Matt's serve.
Before then, that, it was two love, though. But
yeah,
anyway.
But then I staged this heroic comeback, and then I started to get a back problem, and I'd got a heavy cold, and it wasn't my surface. And from two games all, love 30... things just went a bit off, and I ended up losing 10 of the next 11 games, and yes, got defeated heavily, sadly. So, yeah, that happened, and so that was the first time that Catherine saw me particularly downbeat. I think you said, I don't think I've ever seen you this dejected.
It was really, really disconcerting, genuinely. I was trying to do pep talks and David Law was throwing tantrums. Everything was wrong. Everything was upside down.
So what did you make of what you saw down the other end, Matt?
What a question.
That was a hospital pass, yeah. Well, I think in the warm-up I described you as Fernando Gonzalez without the spectacular forehand.
But what is Fernando Gonzalez without his forehand?
Essentially a slice.
Hold on a minute. I did hit that one-handed half volley passing shot, which I think was an accident.
That was unreal, yeah. That flew past me at an angle that I didn't know existed.
You needed a trip to the loo with Federer and Nadal.
I did need that, yeah.
Which is what I was trying to impart, but it fell on rather deaf ears.
I mean, how was it for you, Catherine? Because you did a lot of content on Instagram, but I think... You know,
I had to keep myself entertained, Matt.
Well, the art of social media is basically making things look better than they actually are, isn't it? And I think you did quite a good job on Instagram.
That was better than in reality.
I can tell you, David, that when my brother watched the videos back, he said David's come on a lot because, of course, he was a first-hand.
I won three games.
First-hand witness to what happened 5 years ago, which wasn't pretty.
No.
And his breath was taken away, Matt, by your backhand.
Yeah, so was mine. Oh, I was winded, heavily winded. Yeah,
it's
Matt's
been
got
compared
double...
to Alex Zverev's best player in the world at the moment, Daniil Medvedev.
Oh, yeah, I preferred that comparison to the Sam Querrey one, which someone came up with. But I guess that's also a compliment. But
yeah, I mean, he's top 50 in the world. Yeah. The backhand, he does lean on a backhand, folks. But anyway, the request for a rematch has gone in on a different day, on a different service.
Stop banging on about the surface.
And, well, you know.
It's undignified, David.
These are the factors that we have to
bear in mind. This is worse than
the
defeat.
Right, okay, we've had enough of that. Let's move on.
It's a foreshadowing of the sort of debates we're going to be having when Federer and Nadal have both retired, and we'll be speculating about, but if every slam was played on clay, Nadal would be the undisputed greatest of all time.
I thought you were going to describe Matt and me as next gen for a minute.
Has been described as such on our Instagram.
The words were the true next gen.
Crikey.
Matt has never been so into Instagram comments.
So Daniil Medvedev used to be next gen, and he's now very much now gen, isn't he? And look, he was superb, wasn't he? He won the title in Shanghai. He has backed up the US Open final and the three successive finals in the summer, and the Cincinnati title with a St. Petersburg title, and now he's gone and beaten everybody in Shanghai. Albeit, there was no Nadal. He didn't play Federer. He didn't play Djokovic, but he absolutely hammered Zverev in the final. I think it was 3-love after a few minutes. Zverev got it back to 3-all, and that's when I joined the match. I'd read that little report, but then I was really taken aback by how ordinary Zverev looked compared to him, and I couldn't work out whether that was Zverev really underperforming or whether it is what Medvedev does to you, or certainly did to him anyway. I mean, he had a 4-0 head-to-head going in, Zverev. That's the thing that really shocks me.
But they hadn't played since Toronto last year, and things have obviously changed significantly for both of them since Toronto last year. Was it Toronto? Yes, it was, because it was Montreal this year. I think it's a combination of the both. That is what Medvedev does to you. But Zverev just had no ways at all to hurt Medvedev. None. I mean, he was trying to mix it up a bit and come to the net. And as much as I admire that play and generally like to see it, it is rarely fruitful for Zverev because he's a poor volleyer, isn't he, by top player standards. It's rare that a top 10 player is that poor at volleying. I know a lot of people would say that's been a neglected skill since the sort of death or dormancy of serve volley tennis, but he's definitely poor there, which is perhaps why he forces himself to come to the net so much to try and improve it, in which case good luck to him, that's a good thing. But anyway, and it looked like he was hoping for errors from Medvedev, and if we've learned anything over the past 4 months, it's that Medvedev doesn't make many of them, and it just felt like there's just no way. There's just no way this... You can't see a path for Zverev to punch a hole in the Medvedev game, and so it proved.
What he said afterwards was fascinating, wasn't it, Zverev, about Medvedev? That he said he's playing tennis that we haven't seen before, which I must admit, if somebody had told me at the start of the year that anybody would be saying that about Daniil Medvedev, that would have seemed absurd to me. But what do you make of that, Matt?
Well, it was at the start of the year when I was really trying to figure out what made Medvedev good, because he was winning quite a lot of matches at the back end of last year, and at the start of this year he was looking quite good. And I was trying to think, what actually is it about him that is good? And I honestly couldn't figure it out. I think I wrote one of my blogs at the Australian Open about that. What makes this guy good? And as the year's gone on, and particularly in this stretch we're on now, where he just has won, 29 of his last 32 matches, I've tried to stop figuring out what it is. Because I think when you're looking for that, you're often comparing him to other players. You're trying to think, oh, does he do this as well as someone else? You look for something relatable. But maybe Zverev's right, and maybe Medvedev does just play a brand of tennis that, when you're up against it, is unlike anything that anyone else is producing. And perhaps that is his greatest strength, the sort of uniqueness of his game and the way that his ball is different to other people and what he makes you do, the way he targets your weaknesses, I think. And all this creates a kind of package that is quite difficult to understand when you watch him. But I think the results
are
there.
And probably when you face him
Exactly, when you face him, it's like, how do I beat this guy? Because he doesn't look brilliant. It's almost like it tricks your mind. It's like, I should be beating this guy, but I can't.
There was that great question somebody said, I think intimated, that is it a question that he's almost boring you into defeat? And I mean, it sounds like a terribly negative question, but you can see the genesis, you understand the genesis of it. And Zverev, I mean, he was really fulsome in his praise for Medvedev. He really clearly rates him. Equally, I guess it might be slightly diversionary to sort of deflect us from his own shortcomings in that final, because 4-1 is it's a pretty rough scoreline, isn't it, for Zverev? And it seemed more one sided than that in the tennis that I saw. But he mentally, I mean, this was the subject that we came onto last night, is that you two and Catherine's brother Math were all absolutely raving about Medvedev and particularly hailing his mental strength. I was saying, well, he's had a good 4 months. Which he has. He's had a good 4 months. Let's see how he's getting on in a few months' time, shall we?
But I think he's had a really, really, really good 4 months. Like, this is a 4 months that we've not seen from anyone outside of the big four for years. This hasn't happened. Like, people have had a good tournament. We were talking about the excitement that we've all felt for Shapovalov briefly, for Tsitsipas for a bit longer. But Medvedev has sustained this level of performance now over four months.
Hold on a minute. You can't put Tsitsipas and Shapovalov remotely in the same stratosphere.
No, precisely.
Exactly.
You said a bit longer. Come on, Tsitsipas has broken through at the end of last year, had significant results. He's won the next year, and he's come out and he's beaten Roger Federer at the Australian Open. I mean, he's done a lot.
Yeah, okay. He's done more than Shapovalov, and Medvedev has done more than Tsitsipas by a similar, ratio up, I think.
Ooh, I'm not sure about that.
Help me, Catherine.
Catherine accused me of ruining Daniil Medvedev for her last night.
You said that I mean, I was just saying, I don't need to go over again just how much I enjoyed his stuff at the US Open. It was great. And you've basically said we'll never see any of that again. You said those antics were more or less a one-off. We may see them occasionally, but more than likely he'll be picking up big guarantees and sponsorships and taking Saudi money. So what are we left with? The memories and the metronomic winning of titles. And then I died inside.
Yeah, first of all, I should say that the Saudi money references the fact that he's playing the exhibition in Saudi Arabia with Stan Wawrinka and who else? I can't remember who else.
I think it's top players yet to be announced.
Yeah, right. which so bears mentioning, and you're absolutely right, I was horrified when I saw the announcement of that event and that Medvedev and Wawrinka are playing in it. And as previously expressed, I have concerns. It was an awful turtleneck on the cover of Vogue. I'm worried because I want Daniil Medvedev of US Open 2019 to be preserved forevermore. But I wasn't expecting to have my hopes shattered and thrown in my face like shards of glass by the most upbeat man I've ever met.
Look, I should say, I do think an awful lot of Daniil Medvedev as well. I was particularly won over by his behaviour at the US Open also. And look, I have actually no problem with him, generally speaking, cashing in on the success he's having. I don't like the Saudi Arabia match. I don't think that should be happening. I have no problem with him taking, you know, whatever sponsorships, etc., that he's able to get. But I just don't want him to change. I don't want him to change. Now, I know that's what you don't want him to do. What I'm saying is that I think, I don't know, I think he was shaken by the reaction to that. And I don't think it all in a good way. I think there's a bit of him that thought, oh, you know, I could probably give myself a quieter life if I don't do that. And I'm just not that convinced that we have seen enough to think that this will necessarily carry on. We don't know whether I'm not convinced it's not just a hot streak at the moment. It may well not be. It may well be more than that. But I'm not that convinced yet.
I mean, I felt like that in the summer, I must say. I think our pre-US Open podcast, you know, not to use this word too much, but I don't think we were really putting him in the mix because he hadn't done it at a slam, but he has now done it at a slam, taking Nadal to five sets in the final, and he's not lost a set or a match since then. He's really backed that up, and how often do we see players unable to back up a big result? Okay, he's only done it in two tournaments, but that's more than most players.
Not lost a set, blimey.
He's not lost a set in winning St. Petersburg and Shanghai. And he said afterwards, you know, everyone's talking about the need for new guys. I've given them something new. And, you know, I don't celebrate my wins. I get the job done and bam, that's it. And it kind of feels like we've been waiting for this new person. Medvedev stepped up and now we're all like, can it be another new person?
Well, it's only me who's saying it. You two are absolutely won over by him. Anyway,
I'm very happy with Daniil Medvedev.
Tsitsipas handshake was fantastic, by the way, wasn't it?
Yeah, just it was
sort
great.
Of, you know, it was a kind of I'm going to rise above handshake from Daniil Medvedev, and a sort of I'm just going to walk off as quickly as possible, Stefanos Tsitsipas. It was congratulatory, but Tsitsipas and his rivalry is going to be one of the cool stories, I think, over the next year.
I'm not sure you can come back from calling someone a bullshit Russian. Especially when you're...
Tsitsipas did.
Yeah, especially when you're half Russian yourself. I mean, it's the most amazing foundation for a rivalry ever. There's no way their relationship, shared private jet from Washington to Cincinnati or not, they are going to have an aggro rivalry forevermore, and that's great. Just fine.
Yeah, fantastic. And also, Tsitsipas, he qualified for the ATP finals in the round previous to that. Was that the one where he beat Djokovic?
Well, it was actually a missed opportunity, I thought, by the interviewer, because actually Medvedev's win over Fanini in the quarterfinals qualified Tsitsipas. So I was hoping the question was going to be, thanks to Medvedev, you're now in the ATP finals. How are you feeling about that? But yeah, Tsitsipas beating Djokovic was another way that Tsitsipas would have got in. And as it happened, both those two things happened. Medvedev won and Tsitsipas won.
And he found out in real time with the interviewer.
And he was overjoyed, wasn't he? It was a lovely moment, actually.
No way!
Really? Is it secure?
He looked like such a kid, didn't he? He looked like such a kid. And that's what, I mean, and that was the really good, the good side of Tsitsipas looking like a kid. But one of the things that we were saying in the aggro WhatsApp chat last night was that Medvedev's attitude highlights the fact that the rest of the next gen, I know Medvedev isn't officially next gen anymore, you know what I mean when I say next gen, he makes them look like kids. You know, Medvedev's just getting the job done, doing his business, not faffing, while Tsitsipas is having a whiny tantrum at his dad and asking him to tie his shoelaces for him.
Tsitsipas has got 2.5 years left, though, hasn't he? He's got 2.5 years to make up on Daniil Medvedev. And 2.5 years ago, Medvedev was insulting chair umpires by throwing money at them.
Yeah, so, and he may well be on the same curve. He may well be where Medvedev is now in 2 years. He may well be ahead of it. That'd be really exciting if it is. But we're talking about them in the same breath, in the same sort of bracket. Therefore, we have to compare them.
What did you think of that win for Tsitsipas over Djokovic? Because didn't see that coming. The way the first set went, Djokovic looked brilliant. And I went away for a while and suddenly came back in midway through the third set, and Tsitsipas is really turning the tables completely. I think, Matt, you saw that match in its entirety, didn't you?
Yeah, that was I thought it was the best match of the week. One of the best matches I've seen quality-wise all year. I think when Djokovic plays like that, you just kind of expect him to win. And I thought Tsitsipas did so well to raise his level and kind of force Djokovic down a couple of notches. And by the end, I mean, it was just a joke the way Tsitsipas was playing. Such variety, such sort of potential expansion in his game, the way he can take points away from you, come to the net. And I think I'm right in saying that Djokovic has now lost his most recent matches against a number of the young players. Tsitsipas, Medvedev, team, if you put him in that bracket, Hachanov, I think have all beaten Djokovic at the most recent time they played him. So pattern is starting to emerge that these young players are managing to beat the top guys outside of the slams. They've just not been able to do it at the slams yet, but obviously Medvedev did get close in New York. But yeah, Tsitsipas, it's like someone's just injected life into his season, because he looked finished all since Roland Garros, really. Like, he was just sort of crawling to the finish line, and suddenly he's rejuvenated, and hopefully with the ATP finals, that sort of last bit of motivation that he needs to just get over the finish line.
I think basically we've learned this year that it takes Tsitsipas about 4 months to get over a Grand Slam loss.
Yes.
Or certainly a dramatic 5-set one, which is, you know, endearing, but something he might need to work on.
According to ATP Media Info on Twitter, Tsitsipas is the 102nd player to face Djokovic at least 3 times. He is now only the 4th one of them to have a winning record. He joins Fernando González, Ivo Karlovic and Andy Roddick as players who have a winning record over Djokovic, with 3 more matches between them in total. So, I mean, look...
Will Djokovic retire with a winning or losing record against Tsitsipas?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, I like that one. I'm asking that on Twitter.
There's so many factors that go into answering that.
Yeah, there's some cracking polls. That's why nobody is. Most likely to win a slam in 2020, pole vault. Teams Zverev, Djokovic or Medvedev, not Djokovic, Tsitsipas or Medvedev. And Medvedev had 70% of the 1,600 votes. That's quite a number, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you go with that?
Probably just.
Yeah, I mean, overwhelmingly, but yes, no. I probably would just go Medvedev.
Why are you two holding back now after all this Medvedev is the greatest of all time stuff?
No. It depends who we're comparing Medvedev against, I think, is the key to this. If we're comparing him against the other next gen, to use that term, he is reasonably far ahead with what he's achieved at the moment. But if we're comparing him to Federer, Nadal, Djokovic in terms of possibilities to win Grand Slams, he's still a reasonable way behind, I think, despite what he did in New York.
Will one of them win a Grand Slam in 2020 of those four? Will somebody other...
I think one of them will, yeah.
1,000 votes, 70% say yes. I was quite taken aback by that. Catherine's shaking her head at the polls, I think. Is that this? It's quite interesting now that we actually get to see body language now, and because we've got each other on our phones in a FaceTime video conversation, and Catherine can no longer hide the eye rolls every time I speak.
Yes. Before you just used to be able to feel them. Now you could see them as well.
So it's a good job we haven't videoed.
Do you think one of them
things.
Will?
Do I think one of them will? Ooh. No, I don't.
So you think the big three are winning all another year or all four
yeah.
next
20,
year?
2021 is the year.
That's what Andy Murray said. He thought it'd be 2021. Yeah. But that was pre Medvedev becoming Medvedev.
I'm still going Tsitsipas to be the first one. The way he's improving, I know he had a dip this summer and he needs to sort his schedule out. That, what was that match like, Tsitsipas-Medvedev?
Well, I had just 100% confidence that Medvedev was going to win.
Yeah.
He's 5-0 ahead of him now, isn't he?
Yeah, and Medvedev, he lost serving for the match, and you thought, right, this is really Tsitsipas's chance to get back in it. But then Tsitsipas played the most terrible game at, I think it was 5-5 in the second set, and Medvedev then just closed it out. I think he's just got so much confidence built up, Medvedev.
And the reverse for Tsitsipas, we know how aware he is of his losing head-to-heads, because, of course, he scored his first ever win last week over Felix Auger-Aliassime, who had beaten him 3 times previously. Well, they played in juniors, hadn't they? So it depends whether you count their junior head-to-head. I think the most recent defeat to him was at Queen's, and afterwards he came out with the sort of quotes that you'd think that it was completely bizarre. He just said, the guy's just so much better than me, I'll never beat him. If I ever beat him, I'll have to make some sort of donation to charity. Unspecified donation to charity.
Yeah. It was 10,000 something.
It was like his world had ended. We are unclear on whether that donation to charity has actually happened of 10,000, I don't know, rubles? No.
It's a bit like when I first
What's the currency in Greece? Are they in the Eurozone? Yes.
Yeah.
Euros.
When I was about 12 and I first got interested in this one girl and she turned me down and I was like, I'll never love again.
It's exactly that.
That's it. It's over. Don't care what you say, Dad. Anyway, that was back in 1983. back to the current day. And incidentally, I'm always quite interested in what people have got to say about it. I do find Daniil Medvedev absolutely fascinating as a disruptor. That's the word that I don't know where we've used that word, but he is the ultimate disruptor, isn't he? And I asked whether people had sort of become a fan of him over other previous favourites as a result of the last few months. And Alia in London says, no, but I actively disliked him a mere 2 months ago. I'm now a fan. The turning point, the US Open match against Lopez, he embraced the role of the villain and turned it around. Priscilla in Maine says, yes, I used to be all about Tsitsipas, and now I don't care as much about his results as I do about those of Medvedev. Nina in Canada says, no, he's very likeable, but I can't shake the feeling that he's batshit crazy under the self-control. So, yeah, there's loads of opinions out there. I mean, most people have definitely been won over by him. I haven't found many people who watched his behaviour in New York and didn't like it. You know, most people seem to love it. This is interesting. You know, you sometimes get people on the fence or at least divided about that sort of thing. But no, people loved it. So there we are. There's Daniil Medvedev. There's Shanghai. He's the champion.
Should we do just quickly cover Bad Fed?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we got Bad Fed and we got Andy Murray telling Fabio Fognini to shut up. Shut up is what he said, which is what Catherine was trying to say to me last night.
I've already worn a hole in that gif.
Yeah, that has gone straight to the top of my best moments of 2019, I think.
Yeah. I am amazed, Catherine, that you didn't manage to dig out that gif last night when we were really going for it. I could feel it coming.
I'm trying to ration myself.
I just got the sort of kind of, she just stopped responding after a while. So what was it, Federer?
You're always doing
this.
What
was going on with Federer? I mean, seriously.
We'll do Federer first then, okay.
What was going on with Federer?
Well, he wasn't playing brilliantly, which I think was the primary...
Zverev,
yes, that's it.
Which I think was the primary factor, because there was at one point when he walked towards the chair to resume his verbal battle with the umpire, and the umpire sort of started trying to explain himself a bit, and he said, "Don't worry, buddy, I've got bigger problems than you, or bigger problems than this." Hinting at the fact that we wouldn't be having these issues if I were playing better tennis. But he wasn't, and we were having issues.
I mean, I wasn't watching that match, but I've seen it back, and he got a ball abuse violation for one of the meekest ball abuse violations I think I've ever seen. It was like he sort of flicked the ball away.
Yeah, it was not. I mean, I think the wording of the ball abuse rule is about has to be sort of out of control or a threat of causing harm, the possibility of causing harm to somebody. And I think Federer's got a pretty legit argument that that wasn't the case.
I've seen him do worse and not get a ball abuse. I mean, he does occasionally whack the ball out of the stadium, but it was nothing like that. I mean, I like aggro Fed, but I don't think it helps him really. I think his whole sort of greatness, part of it is built on his ability to stay calm and to not lose his head. And you know, it's the whole pep talk he gave Zverev at the Laver Cup, and this was not that.
Yeah, he needed his own pep talk, didn't he? I agree. As a viewer, I'm captivated by aggro Fed. But I don't think it's a good sign for where his tennis is at.
He also was. I mean, Zverev played very well in that match and was a worthy winner. But there was a period of about 15 minutes where Federer was a set, a break, and 40 love down, and he produced some of the best tennis I've ever seen to break Zverev. It was, you know, you're jumping out of your chair watching it. No matter the fact that he's been playing for 20 years, it's just so hard to believe the shots he was conjuring. Zverev down the other end, it was all he could do not to shake his head and think, well, what was that? But he still held it together and turned it around and won it in three. But it was certainly a reminder from Federer that the magic is still there. It's whether the physical elements can keep up, but there's no real sign of him losing any of that. He was also grouchy in the press conference afterwards, wasn't he? He gave one of our colleagues a I don't know, pretty snarky response to a perfectly reasonable question. I'm using snarky, by the way, folks, having looked it up in Urban Dictionary.
I was just about to say snarky is a good word for it.
I know.
I think that's the perfect word for what he was. I think it was out of order, really. I mean, plenty of other players do it, behave that way in press conferences in response to completely legitimate questions. And we always say, you know, why can't they be more like Federer, who is endlessly patient? So I think, you know, we should point out when Federer is not like Federer.
And the question was why he was upset, wasn't it?
Could you just explain in your own words why you were upset with the umpire in the situation? Completely legit question.
Federer just paused and said, "What? Do you want to put it on Twitter or something?"
Yeah, and then he said something else, arsey, and then said next question.
So a bit like me last night, really. yeah. So that's Federer. Yeah, I was very grouchy last night, and I was busting for a fight about frankly nothing. That's something your brother said, wasn't it? He said, "I quite like it when Federer knows he's being an idiot, but he does it anyway." And that was kind of what I was doing last night, to be quite honest.
The only comparison this week between David Law and Roger Federer.
Yeah. Got to have something in common, haven't we? Andy Murray telling Fabio Fognini to shut up was magical. And for the fact that Fanini just wound him up so much, it was just like the old times. It was great. But he twice served for the match under those circumstances and didn't win the match, which I would say is simply an element of just where he is in his comeback. Those senses are not quite refined just yet, but they will be.
Yeah, it was still all good news, wasn't it? The performance was good news. I still thought it was a step up on even what we'd seen the previous week, even on the Berrettini win and what was the win prior to the Berrettini win? I always want to say Tennis Sangren, but it's not Tennis Sangren. Whoever he beat in Beijing before Berrettini. Yes, I thought it was a step up on that, even though he lost, because tennis-wise, it was just more evidence that it was there. You know, the Andy Murray hustling, it was something really evocative about watching old-school Andy Murray hustling. Old-school Andy Murray hustling, Andy Murray aggro and irritation at himself, and then the despair and disappointment in the press conference afterwards at having lost. It was so great to see how gutted he was at having lost. You know, he was asked, I think, you know, can you take positives in that match given how well you played at this stage of your comeback? He said, no, I'm just really, really gutted right now, which is great. Absolutely great. And Matt thinks he's winning in Antwerp this week.
Oh yeah, this was good. Yeah, this was good. We got this this line on WhatsApp, and I ran a pole vault, and I said, "Who said this tonight? Title for Murray in Antwerp unless Kim goes into labour. She's pregnant, by the way, folks, because we found that out in the Times. Calling it now, liking this draw." Mm. And I said, "Who said that?" The results came in, and 54% of the 600-plus people thought that I said it. 25% thought that Catherine said it, and a mere 14% thought that you said it, just ahead of Rosie on 9%. But it was, in fact, Matt. So explain yourself, Matt.
Well, I was in Valencia. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I was one or two sangrias down. But, but no, I genuinely think... completely agree with what you've been saying about Murray. I just think he's actually playing pretty well. He's lost to really top good players who are in form, and I'm not really seeing them necessarily in his draw in Antwerp. I think he's got Coppens and then maybe Delbonis, Schwartzman, Goffin, Monfils is a sort of potential title run. I mean, I'm sure it won't end up like that, but If Murray can play as he has been, I could see him winning those matches. And I think the fact that he's looking stronger towards the end of matches is such a positive as well. You know, he was sort of bent over double against, who was it, Alex de Minaur a few weeks ago in Zhuhai after a couple of hours, but he's lasting till the end now in these physical matches. So yeah, I've given myself a little caveat. If Kim can go into labour, that would get me out of that prediction. But no, I'm standing by it.
Imagine what a story that would be.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, we didn't even think he was a tennis player anymore, let alone a title one. Really would be remarkable.
Spent 6 minutes talking about Andy Murray. We haven't mentioned the hip, which is good news.
Because you spend a whole match watching Andy Murray and you don't think about the hip.
Mm. Yeah, no, you're right.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Coco Gauff, at the age of 15, is a champion in Linz, and she was that horrible tennis expression, a lucky loser, because she lost in qualifying, got into the draw because somebody else pulled out, and ended up winning the whole tournament. She beat three current or former top 10 players in Kiki Bertens, Andrea Petkovic, and then Yelena Ostapenko in the final. She was absolutely fantastic, and I think we're all quite careful about the hype around Coco Gauff, but the way she plays, I mean, hype is impossible. Sort of excitement around her is impossible. This is the first player, she's the youngest player to win a title on the WTA Tour since Nicole Vidasova in 2004. And I remember Vidasova back then. She was a big ball striker. Coco Gauff, there's a lot more to her than a big ball striker.
2004 being the year that Coco Gauff was born. yeah, it's...
Oh, God.
It's the way that she plays this sort of smart, mature tennis beyond her years. And I thought the final against Ostapenko kind of just exposed that. You know, Ostapenko is obviously a Grand Slam champion, but she's not an intelligent tennis player. And, you know, she's capable of hitting unbelievable winners, and she's great to watch when she's doing that. But you don't really get the sense that she's thinking that tactically about the match, whereas Coco Gauff, you absolutely do. There was a really interesting coaching session just as she had failed once to serve it out. I think her father, Corey Gauff, came on and said, "We're not going to sprint to the finish, we're going to walk there," which was not only good advice for Coco Gauff, but also, I think, kind of good advice for everyone talking about Coco Gauff, in that, you know, this isn't a sprint. She doesn't need to get there straight away. She has got many years ahead of her, and she will go, hopefully she'll be allowed to go at her own pace, and if she is, you have to think that she will get there, because she just seems to have the goods.
I would like it if they just frankly left it at that, really, rather than... I saw one graphic put up, I'm not sure who produced it, but Patrick Mouratoglou tweeted his congratulations, and there was a graphic next to his tweet saying, "Born for this," I think it was, and I just sort of, and you know, there's it's very difficult for sponsors, etc., not to want to make the most out of this already, and there's the Call Me Coco campaign and all this sort of thing, because her name is still down as Corey Gauff in the media guide and all that sort of thing. But I just feel a little bit uncomfortable with all that. I'd like them to just let her play when she plays and leave the rest of it alone. I know that's really naive, but...
Yeah, the level of commercial exploitation of her makes me feel a bit uncomfortable. And I know that is... a very negative way of putting it, but I don't see how it can be anything other than exploitative with a 15-year-old. You know, she's below the age of consent for all the things that require, you know, full engagement and development of critical faculties. Therefore, there should be an element for me of protection. It's so difficult, but I know how I felt when I saw her doing that thing of making sure she had her watch on, her sponsor's watch for the presentation ceremony. And I didn't, it made me wince. And I wanted to just enjoy the moment of seeing a young person do an incredible thing and not sort of think about what it all means and worry that she's going to be commercially exploited and all the rest of it. But having said all that, she is now, I think, guaranteed to make the main draw of the Australian Open. I think she's top 80, actually. And that's great. I want to see her at the Australian Open. I want to see what she can do. But I am absolutely for just tapering the hype a bit and letting her just be and develop and figure out who she is.
The good news is she does seem to be, well, she seems to be really enjoying it. She seems to be thriving whilst all this is going on. And all I can say is long may that continue. Let's hope that is the way it continues to go. The player she beat in the final, Yelena Ostapenko, coached by Marion Bartoli. I don't remember that announcement, but I found that really interesting to watch Bartoli as coach on the sidelines. That's the first time I've seen her in that role. But having commentated with her, I can see what she would have to offer. She's a fascinating analyst to listen to. And Ostapenko's been crying out for some new guidance, really. So maybe this is the start of something.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because she's not a... I don't feel like she engages brain very much, Ostapenko. It's, you know, it's see ball, hit ball. Isn't it? I'm not sure she's thinking, oh, what would my coach want me to do here? How would she want me to hit this tennis ball? Where should I direct it? It's just thump, hit and hope. So, yeah, I find it interesting because Bartley is a tactician. She's a really good analyst of the game. And, of course, she had a lot of variety in her own game. So, I mean, I don't think variety is ever going to be the spice of Yelena Ostapenko's life, but bringing a bit more of that into it, because she got so tactically outplayed by Coco Gauff, a 15-year-old, didn't she? She got given a masterclass really in that department. So if she's willing to listen and make changes, then I'm quite excited about that partnership.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch with interest. Another winner out of the blue, or at least finalist run, was Heather Watson, who ended up getting to the final in Tianjin, beaten by Rebecca Pettersson in the final. But Watson's first final on the WTA Tour for 3 years. And, I mean, she's down at 125 in the world, so she's struggled. But that's a big result for her.
Yeah, she's had some decent results, I think, you know, on the level kind of below the WTA Tour this year. Was it in the ITFs? I think she's won a couple of titles. And that's kind of what it looked to me on the court this week. Like, she had found a bit of confidence out of nowhere. She was a lot less... I always think she kind of has a bit of trouble finishing points, Heather Watson. But she was a lot more aggressive when she was in the right position. And she looked far happier, far more confident on the court. It was a real shame that the final was, heavily delayed by rain. They had to go indoors. I mean, there was only marginally more people than were at our match, David, which is not a sort of glowing review, really.
If you count the folks that were playing cardio tennis and having the odd glance over, I think possibly Robert's Law was better attended.
I think you could be right, actually.
What Watson, despite straight sets defeat, was rather more competitive than I was. So anyway, well done, Heather Watson.
And I must say, Rebecca Pettersson is one of those players whose name I found popping up a lot this year. And that normally means you're doing quite well, I think. And I had a look. And
it's a bit like Sophia Kennan, isn't it? Somebody like that who just keeps on
producing
some results and becoming relevant.
She's more or less halved her ranking this year, Rebecca Pettersson. She's up inside the top 40 now. So she's really having a good season. I think this was her last event.
Juan Sebastian Cabal and Robert Farah are the year-end world number one doubles pair, so congratulations to them, and they've done that pretty early on. And they'll, of course, be at the ATP Finals in a few weeks' time at the O2 Arena. We've also had a new coaching alliance between Dan Evans and Mark Hilton. Not a great surprise. They worked together before, and Evans now... the new British number one for the first time. I read some quotes today from him, Catherine, saying that to his mind, Andy Murray is still the British number one, but, you know, he's clearly chuffed. And I mean, overall, when you consider the low ebb that he's come from, obviously self-caused because of the suspension he had, but it's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it, what he's achieved? I mean, I think it also shines a spotlight on how much of a tough time Kyle Edmunds had, 7 match losses in a row, but Evans has just kept on producing.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how high that ranking can go, sort of what his... I think we're going to finally find out what the natural ceiling is for Dan Evans, because Matt and I were discussing this on the train back from Solihull on Tuesday. He doesn't... We were discussing it in the context of the Davis Cup and what we could perhaps expect from him in the Davis Cup finals, assuming he makes the team, which you'd think he would. You don't think of him as somebody necessarily... He doesn't punch above his ranking that often. Yeah, you can pick out the odd win, you know, particularly most of them, I think, at slam level. Chilich at the Australian Open a couple of years ago, he had that win against Nishikori, of course, that performance against Wawrinka at the US Open. But basically, week in, week out on the tour, he plays to his ranking. And over the last year or so, we've been discovering what that ranking is. And I think, you know, injury permitting, over the next 6 months, we will finally find out what the kind of baseline natural ranking is of Dan Evans. I'm not sure top 30 is quite possible. What do you think?
I think it might be. I mean, he thinks he's still got further to go. And I mean, look, he's come very close in some Grand Slam matches now, which would have put him into... You know, you could imagine. I could imagine him being a last 16 player at Wimbledon. I mean, he was very close to that, wasn't he, against Sosa at Wimbledon. I could definitely imagine him being in second week of Wimbledon. I think he has got top 30 in him if he keeps going the way he is. I mean, he's 29 years of age. I think you're right that this is the time we find out his ceiling, because I don't think there's that many miles on the clock in as much as, I mean, he thinks he can play to mid-30s is what he was saying in these quotes today. And I could believe that. The interview on the BBC Sport website, I think with Russell Fuller. He wants to play into his mid-30s. Now, a lot can happen, but I'd be surprised if we saw him go off the rails again. I think he's old enough and mature enough now to realise, you know, this isn't going to last forever. I've got to make the most of this.
Do you think he will relish Andy Murray coming back in the frame and kind of the pressure or the attention being away from Dan Evans again? Because naturally, I mean, it's going to fall on Murray again.
Yes and no. I remember last at the US Open, Catherine, you interviewed Evans, didn't you? You asked him about pressure and he said, no pressure on me. You know, he was dismissive of that, wasn't he? He just couldn't understand why there would be any pressure on him. And I think that's kind of how his mind works. I think within a match, he can find himself feeling pressured because he realises just how much he's on it. But I don't think he gives a stuff what anybody thinks out there. Mm. I don't think he cares about what any of us are talking about, what any of the fans are talking about. I don't think it bothers him in the slightest, really.
And it's quite interesting that he's with Mark Hilton, because, you know, that what you've just said there about Dan Evans, I don't think applies to Kyle Edmund. I think he does care more about what other people think, and he does feel that pressure. And it's an interesting, I think that I read some quotes from Dan Evans saying that what makes Hilton a good coach is he is adaptable. The way he can coach someone like Edmund successfully, as he did for a long period, and Dan Evans. So it'd be interesting to see how Hilton goes back to being with a player of Dan Evans's character rather than Kyle Edmund.
Yeah. Incidentally, that's the current state of British tennis on the men's side. And we've obviously discussed Heather Watson, Joe Konta. I think I think he's going to play in Zhuhai, but I'm not 100% sure. She's not playing Moscow because of the ongoing knee injury she's had. Jack Draper, the young teenager, has had a couple of notable results in the last week. He beat Jack Sock in three sets. I know Jack Sock's not playing that much at the moment, and he's working his way back, but still, it's a good win on paper. And he also beat Donald Jung. And I can only, aside from what you see on the court, which is a player with clear talent and athleticism, I just like the way Jack Draper carries himself. I like the look in his eye. When I met him briefly at Queen's, and just he's got a really solid feel to him, the way he carries himself. He's a strapping lad, and I feel like he has got his eye on making the most of it. You know, I don't know whether have you two come into touch with him at all? Have you seen him much of him?
I remember watching him with my family in the junior, the boys' Wimbledon final last year, 2018, which he lost. But we were impressed with his shot making ability and his attitude. Yeah, I mean, if the other sort of British youngsters are the next gen, he's the Daniil Medvedev. I think he has just a bit more of something about him, bit more belief, bit more swagger.
Swag's the word for me. Yeah, he's got that. Mm. I think did I read that he's the youngest player in the top 400 now? So,
oh really?
So I think, you know, he's very much going in the right direction, isn't he? And be interesting, yeah. Next year will probably, if he wants to keep progressing, next year will be a big year when he starts playing more regularly on the Challenger circuit, I suppose.
Yeah, and maybe trying to qualify for a few tour events, maybe, something like that. I guess we'll see whether he can get high enough. Maybe he gets a few wild cards into qualifying, that sort of thing. Anyway, that's the tennis of the week. What about our Davis Cup by Rakuten finals competition? For those tickets and a trip, flights, hotel to Madrid, November 18th to the 24th. We've been running this competition for a few weeks now, and it is finally time to find out who's won it. It has been won by Mr. Tim Lee, who came out of the random number selector that Matt sent me so that we could draw it out. So I think we better give him a call and find out what he thinks of it.
Hi, Tim speaking.
Hello, Tim.
Hi, David.
Hello, Tim. Hello. You are our winner, I'm delighted to say.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. You are going to be going, should you be free, and a guest of your choice to the Davis Cup Finals in Madrid. How does that sound?
That sounds incredible. Thank you so much.
Oh, pleasure. A pleasure. So the correct answer was indeed the 2015 year that we first did our Davis Cup Finals daily podcasts, and you got it right. And so you're the first one out of the hat. I say out of the hat. We actually did one of those electronic number generators, because apparently putting pieces of paper in a hat these days is a bit outdated. But anyway, your name came out, so a very big congratulations from all of us.
Wow, that's just incredible. Thank you.
So I don't think New Zealand are in the Davis Cup finals. So who do you want to see?
No, Great Britain.
You want to see Great Britain?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's fantastic. Why Great Britain?
Well, I'm English. I've lived in New Zealand for a couple of years, but Andy Murray's been my favourite player since first seeing him at Wimbledon as a 18-year-old. So I can't wait to see him play again.
That's fantastic. Well, yeah, I mean, he said he wants to play. So, I mean, fitness permitting, I suppose. But yeah, he wants to play. That's brilliant. Now, I've been looking up over the last 20 minutes how far away. Where is it you live? What's the town called?
The town's called Tianao. It's right down the bottom of the South Island.
Yeah. See, I've looked this up and it says the flight is 35 hours. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, I think I've probably got the longest way to go out of anyone who entered the competition.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It's brilliant.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah, no, it really will. Yeah, huge congratulations. Thanks for entering. Thanks for listening. And hope you have a fantastic time.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
So there's Tim Lee, our winner. How cool is that? He's going to Madrid. Isn't that lovely?
It's very, very lovely. It took you a long time to twig that he that was a British accent.
Yeah. Well, did you get it straight away?
Yeah. I suppose I was listening out for it because I was intrigued about, you know, because New Zealand obviously aren't going to be in the Davis Cup finals. But I mean, accent identification is a skill of mine, I suppose. I don't know. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Well, we all know I'm not the sharpest. So,
I didn't mean to make you feel bad about your accent identification. It was just quite sweet when you asked him who he was going to be supporting. Like, mate, New Zealand haven't made it. Who are you going to support?
So, Matt, you're going to meet up with him when you're over there in Madrid. Listen, folks, just to give you an idea of what this all means, we have, in our 2 days of meetings and one-sided defeat at the hands of Matt Roberts a couple of days ago in Solihull, we had lots of meetings and we were talking about what's coming up, and we are going for it. We are going to do daily editions of the Tennis Podcast from the WTA Finals. Well, we're going to try because none of us are there and we're all doing other things. And I'm going to be commentating on it for BT Sport. Catherine's going to be presenting Paris that week for Amazon Prime Video. But we're still going to give it a go. We're going to try and produce daily editions of the WTA Finals as a podcast. We'll do the same from the Fed Cup final, from the ATP Finals at the O2 Arena. And then Matt here is going to Madrid, so we can do daily shows from the Davis Cup by Rakuten finals. Matt, you're going to meet up with Tim. Awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. He was, I loved how sort of genuinely speechless he was at the start of that phone call. That's kind of, I imagine myself reacting a bit like that, sort of unable to get my words out that I'm going to a tennis event. so yeah, really, no, we all really, and it was overwhelming actually, the number of sort of entrance we got from really all over the world, and of course it would be the one that was furthest away that came out of the random number generator.
Yeah, brilliant.
How long is the trip? 35 hours, something like that.
Yeah, just the 35 hours. So, you know, pack a couple of good books, Tim, and Matt will see you over there. We will be back with you next week for another tennis podcast. Catherine and I will get together. I think Matt's on the other side of the world himself. Matt, you're from another one of your holidays. You've been to Valencia this week, seeing you with paella and beer. Where are you going next week?
Next week I'm going to Washington, D.C. So if anyone has any recommendations, send us an email.
Right, I'll be in Solihull then. I might meet up with Catherine next week. Brilliant. Have a lovely time.
Thank you.
We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y. Listen to us every week. Tell everybody you know. Is there anything else I'm missing out before we go, Catherine?
Oh, no, don't think so.
Not a thing. We're all podcasted out, folks.
Catherine was just logging off then, I think.
So Catherine's gone, everybody. So we might as well go as well. So see you next week. New podcast, and bye-bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.